Okay. I was consumed over all Shabbos by two principles in halacha. Halacha kebasrai, the halacha follows the latest opinion. And the contrary, I want to show they're not contradictory, ein lo ladayin elo masha ein avroos. A dayan can only judge by the circumstance of his time and his own seichel. Right? What his own heart tells him is correct. We're going to see how these two principles influence Polish Jewry and the greats that mipihen anu chayim. So last chabura, we drew a general distinction between a suffek of shishin, when the iser beheter is min bemino, versus when it's min b'sheino mino. If we know that there was at least a rov, and our suffek is only whether there was shishin, then there's a nafkamina between min b'mino and min b'sheino mino. If it's min b'mino, which is batel b'rov min haTorah, then the suffek shishim is midrabanan. If it's min b'sheino mino, where tam ki ikar b'shar devar, isurim, is the oraisa, so the flavor is still an inyan, and shishim's a marker for whether the flavor is perceptible, then the suffek shishim is the oraisa and l'chumra. All this we saw last time. The Taz cites the Toras Chatas on what he considers to be an exception to this rule. Before we even get to that, I like each week to introduce elements of halachic literature that we need to know and that we're going to encounter many, many times. So a word about the Toras Chatas, or more than a few words. I want to place it within the context of the Rama's other works and the halachic literature authoritative among Ashkenazic Jews, and particularly Polish Jews, in the 16th century. So as I said, we can identify, I said before, two general impulses in Torah learning. There's the drive towards Perush HaSugya. We'll call this the interpretive motive, or the Perusha. There's also the drive towards Psak, and we'll call this the codificatory motive, or Lehilchasa. I've got listeners in blacker areas of the, you know, from world, who were saying to themselves, Vusment codificatory, to codify it, right? To write psak. These two motifs, or motives, actually, compete within all of us in our learning. There are personalities within our own yeshiva who are inclined toward the codificatory approach. So their agenda in learning is the organization of Deos Vishitos Leman Psaka Halacha. I don't need to identify for you, I'm sure you can know many. Then there are the personalities within our yeshiva who are inclined toward the interpretative approach. Their agenda is the organization of the sugya into a conceptual framework. The two motives compete for attention within any student of the Torah. So in certain periods of our history, one or the other of the motives has been paramount. And sometimes that's because of historical exigencies, and sometimes because of the temperament of a particular Torah giant, and the impact he has on his Talmidim and their Talmidim for a number of generations. We're going to deal with the latter case today. In Poland, where the Rama flourished, the interpretive motive ruled supreme in the early 16th century. This is largely due to the influence of Rabbi Yaakov Pollock, known as the founder of the style of learning to which we refer as pilpul or chilukim, the subtle logical distinctions used to explain details in Talmudic dialectic. Now, Rabbi Pollack married a woman from Prague, and he served there as a Rav and Rosh Yeshiva with international prominence. But a famous case forced him to leave his Rabbanus and return to Poland. In 1492, while the Jews of Spain were preparing to leave and Christopher Columbus was headed toward North America and the eventual founding of Yeshiva University, right? It's a word from our sponsor, right? The sister of Rabbi Yaakov Pollack's wife officially refused to remain married to the man who had married her before she reached the age of 12 years and a day. This is, of course, the Talmudic institution for Ketana of Meun. According to the Gemara in Yevamos, a minor who has been betrothed or married before the age of legal majority by her mother or her brother, not her father, but by her mother or brother, can refuse by saying, "E if she biploni bali," or some other lashon. As I've told my wife on many occasions, it doesn't work when you're not a ketana. Okay? No get is required. It's as if she were never married. She may still marry a kohen, because she's not a grusha. Okay? In 1492, the sister-in-law of Rabbi Yaakov Pollack declared her desire not to be married to her husband. And Rabbi Yaakov certified the act in Beis Din following the conclusions of the sugya in Yevamos. Here's the rub. 50 years prior, there had been a takana prohibiting the practice of meyum. The uproar was extreme. The mefalpel had ignored precedent and followed the din of the Gemara. Even his Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov Menierenberg, the father of his partner in the Prague Yeshiva, joined in the cheirem. This singular event, this meyum, set the character of halachic literature in Poland and hence through Ashkenaz for centuries. It was a pretty good mystery, right? You know?
I'm just a bit confused on the case. So he allowed what part?
She did Meun. She said she didn't want to. He certified it in Beis Din, and he allowed her to remarry without a get.
And that wasn't... And the takana years ago was...
That you don't allow any more Meun. There's no Meun. You have to go through get. So what happened? Rabbi Yaakov, he stood his ground. Lahavdil, this sounds like a Harry Potter story, right? I'm getting a little worked up. I'm sorry. I'm getting a little dramatic. You can read a little bit about it, believe it or not. In the Yamshel Shlomo, in Masefes Yevamos, in Perek Yud Gimel, at Siman Yud Zayin. Okay? And the Marshal reports, his sister-in-law married another man on the force of his Masei Beis Din. This toppled him from his rabbinic perch in Prague, and Rabbi Pollack returned to Poland. Now, besides being an insight into the nature of rabbinic authority in the Middle Ages, this is particularly important because the mefalpel par excellence, who was unsympathetic to the codificatory motive and left no piskei din, became the teacher of Rabbi Shalom Shachna, who replaced him as Rav and Rosh Yeshiva in Lublin. Now, in Professor Asher Ziv's edition of the Tshuvos HaRamah, and Professor Ziv was a staple of the YU faculty for a great many, many years. My own father-in-law, Zichrono Livracha, had him as a teacher. Many people around him as a teacher. I knew him when he would come to Teaneck. His son lives in Teaneck. He produced some excellent grandchildren who are serving the Jewish community as Clay Kodesh. Okay? Yeah. So Professor Asher Ziv put out the edition of Tshuvos HaRamah. And you can find a tshuva there that's written actually by Rabbi Yisrael Shachna, who was the son of Rabbi Sholem Shachna, the Rosh Yeshiva of Lublin. And he explains therein why his father was opposed, despite pressure from his disciples, to write Piskei Din. Halacha is a living and breathing institution. Every dayan and posek must rule according to what the times require and what his own seichel and heart tell him is proper. So Rabbi Sholem feared that his decisions would become precedent and assume an authority that they should not, in his modesty, claim. And you got to know, he was known as Me'or Kol Hagola. He was a, you know, this was not a a rabbi in a young Israel in somewhere in Oshkosh. We have, in his estimation, two contrary principles, he writes. Halacha kebasrai, and ein lo ledayan ela masha einav roos. The former, the appeal to authority, should not overrule the appeal to judgment, particularly when the authority adjudges himself to be unworthy. It's a beautiful statement of the proper midah of modesty that one finds regularly among gedolim and rarely among pretenders. So Rabbi Yisrael writes there in the tshuva that this mistrust of codifying one's decisions came from his father's Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Pollack, who also did not collect his rulings in a sefer. In fact, he writes, they didn't even keep a copy in the yeshiva of any of the tshuvos that they sent to Jewish communities throughout Ashkenaz, because they felt that keeping even a single copy presumed that they accorded them lasting importance and was therefore a sign of hubris, Yora. Wow. Now, since these two gedolim formed the band of brothers who marked the beginning of the Polish tradition in learning, there was a strong influence on the Polish rabbinate to eschew written psak. This makes the career of the Talmid of Rabbi Sholem Shachna, the Ramah, quite extraordinary. Rabbi Moshe Isserles was born around 1530 in Krakow. He studied in Lublin under Rabbi Sholem Shachna until the age of 19 and returned to Krakow to become a Rav, its Rav, at the age of 20. His career tragically spanned only 22 years, for he died in his early 40s. But during that time, the Ramah was very prolific. We're interested in his halachic output, which in addition to the tshuvos, includes three major works: the Darkei Moshe on the Tur, the Toras Chatas on Iser V'Heter, and the Mapa on the Shulchan Aruch. In the Hakdama to the Darkei Moshe, he describes the essential need for collections of decisions. Whenever he would research a halachic question, he would begin with the Gemara, proceed to the Gaonim, then to the Rif, and then the Rishonim. Only that often, after arriving at a decision, he would be told by others of a tshuva here, a tshuva there, demonstrating that his decision was incorrect and that he appeared like an Am Haaretz, he writes. It was very hard for the Ramah to look like an Am Haaretz. I'm much better at it than he is. Let us be clear. this is not a repudiation of the humility of his teachers, but in fact a nod to it. The Ramah did not believe that he was entitled to reconsider the primary sources without the benefit of greater earlier authorities who had already done so. He was not looking to stultify the halacha by fixing it according to the fact of their decisions, but to incorporate it into his analysis. He needed to see all the material, and relying on the pillars of the halacha, the Gemara and the Rif, for instance, denied him of the wisdom of later authorities who read the same sources. So the Ramah was, however, mindful of the burden, surveying the entire available shoot literature would create. So he collected, he summarized, and he abridged. This then motivated him as well in the writing of the Darkei Moshe, his Perush on the Torah. He would summarize the major views and then append additional material. And that's what the Darkei Moshe does. This second motive became all the more important when the Beis Yosef reached him shortly after its publication. At first, he didn't know what to do, since the superior nature of the work, it was also a commentary on the Torah, and the authority of Rabbi Yosef Karo was so staggering that it seemed to obviate the need for his sefer. In his Hakdama, he writes of the confusion that the appearance of the Beis Yosef inspired in him. But after spending some time with it, he returned to writing, for he found that the Beis Yosef, as great as it was, relied on a small group of authorities, in particular, you know, because we've discussed this before, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush. It ignored the principle, Halacha Kebasrai, which, in the ultimate irony, the Ramah cites the Rif himself at the end of Eruvim, who writes that this principle is fundamental to Psak. Interestingly, this klal, by the way, Halacha Kebasrai, never appears in the Gemara itself. The earliest mentions of it are in the Tshuvos HaGaonim and the She'iltos, by the way. Ramah's second sefer, the Toras Chatas, and I'll pass around one edition of it, this is one that I have, right, deals with Iser V'Heter. The reason for the name, he explains, is that he is aware of his own fallibility. Before writing his opinions, which are bound to include some reflection of his humanity and tendency to err, he felt obligated to bring kivyachol a Toras Chatas. For he who sins b'shogeg. In it, in the Toras Chatas, he balances, as he writes in the Hakdama, two contradictory motifs. Halacha kebasrai, or ein lo ledayan elamasha ein av roos. Maybe we'll say contrary rather than contradictory, because the two are contradictory only when the dayan is humble, since every decisor might view himself as an equal to the great authorities who immediately preceded him. When we get to the Beur HaBra, we'll see that he does feel he can go back and begin again from the Gemara. Whereas in his Darkei Moshe, the Ramah celebrates the virtue of conciseness, he notes in the Toras Chatas that brevity can be taken to an extreme and confuse rather than enlighten. So he believes that this was the case with the Share Dura, a popular work from the 13th century on Iser V'Heter, which we've already seen cited, written by Rabbi Yitzchak ben Meir Halevi. By the way, the real name of the book is the Sefer HaSharim, right? But that's a really nondescript name. It became known by the city where the author resided, Durin, which is D U with an umlaut R-E-N. So it's the Share, it's a Sharim, but it's a Share Dura. The Sharim that came from Dura, right? Okay? The Hagos Share Dura, which we've also seen and cited very often, was a commentary on the work by the Truma Sedeshim. Okay? Now, at the end of Sif Katan Hay, here in Sadi Ches, the Taz supplements the simple construct previously on the difference between Min B'mino and Min B'sheino Mino regarding Nishpach and Safek Shishin. He brings the decision of the Roma in Toras Chatas regarding a special case. If milk falls into a pot of chicken and is spilled so that we don't know whether there was shishin. Okay, so let's reason it out. If we follow only the distinction that we laid out previously, then dehainu bein d'oraisa levein d'rabbanan, then based on what we saw in the mechaber, we would say simply, sveika d'rabbanan l'kula, right? Since chicken and milk are only isurim mishum basar b'chalav midrabanan. So that's pretty straightforward, right? Okay? In the Toras Chatas, however, the Rama reasons actually otherwise. So it's here in the Machon Yerushalayim edition. It's Amud Yud. The fifth wide line there in the Taz. You have another edition, you'll find it towards the end of this Sif Katan Hay in the Taz and Sadi Ches. The words we're looking for are Vikasov Betoras Hatas, Klal Pehe. Towards the, about two thirds through. You see it? You have it? Who has my edition? Here, you can use my edition. Okay? You want to pass my edition there? You can use mine. You have another copy there. Okay?
You have it.
Yeah, you can take mine. You can use mine.
Just
yeah.
To clarify the case, the Shulchan Aruch, if you would drop milk into chicken soup, so uh-huh.
Kli Rishon on the fire, so there's no, like, whatever. It's Mivashio, right?
Right.
So there's Bishul.
So there is Bishul, but we're not saying. I mean, I thought Derabanan also, I'm saying, so it's Min Bishen and we know, therefore it would be Min Shishin, right?
Yeah. But here's what we're saying. Last week we said that, how about if it was Nishbach? And you don't know whether there was Shishin, right?
Yeah.
So Min HaTorah. Since it's not Basar B'chalav, you should probably only need Rov. So it should be Sveika D'Rabbanan L'Kula. Right? But the Toras Chatas says it isn't Sveika D'Rabbanan. Or it's not L'Kula. You still, if you're not sure, it's Aser.
Doesn't the Shulchan Aruch mention that in the, I forget, because what Adonai were learning was...
Well, look and see, because we only know what we have on our Siman, right?
Okay.
Okay. So you get the problem? See what the question is? If we answer purely on the basis of D'Oraisa D'Rabbanan, right, we would say, well, Basar Of B'Chalav is D'Rabbanan, and therefore, if it's Suffix Nishbach, so that's Suffix Shishim, right? Okay. We would say Shishim is only Durabanan and therefore Sveika Durabanan Lakula. However, the Taz says otherwise. Let's read. Do you have it? Did you find it? Want to give it to me and I'll find it for you, or are you going to want to keep on looking?
I'll find it. Okay. I had it a second ago.
Okay. I have that happen to me all the time, that published books, the ink changes miraculously when I take my finger away.
Yeah.
Okay, got it? Okay. V'kasa b'toras hatas, klal pehe, b'shem isa v'heta. We're going to discuss this work another time. Okay? Afilu im nafal chalav lebesar of shehud rabbanan v'nishbach asur ho'il v'tam ki'ikar d'oraisa. Wow. First, the Taz attacks his opinion. V'lich ora Tumuhin ma'od devarav. Ma mehane shatam ki ikarhu. Afilu ima ikar be'ein. Hava ella isur derabonin. Lefi ma shetofe sakshav debasar of bechalav derabonin. So first, min ha'torah. We may extend the isur to its flavor as well, meaning that if a foodstuff is usser, then its flavor is also usser, even if its atzmus is nullified, right? However, the fundamental iser that we've extended is only drabanan, right? If there were no question of bitul and it was just mixed, the tarovus would only be usser drabanan, right? Why should the flavor be any more usser than the atzmus iser, right? So it may be that according to the prohibited status of a chefza shel isur applies to its flavor as well, according to the Torah. This does not, however, change the underlying nature of the isur, which remains derabanan. So in this first logical level, the Torah's chatas doesn't work. Uvemes, lo kosav ha-isur v'heter b'zeh, shehu derabanan. Kemoshe ha'iti Torah's chatas mishmo. Nimsa shehu kasav zeh leman desvirle besar of hu dioraisa. Vechein kasav hu behedje klaumet. So he says, first of all, no. Well, the reason that the Isa Reheta wrote this is because he held like the mandamar that besar of bechalav is dioraisa. Therefore, nishpach, you don't have a shishim, it's like any other dioraisa, right? So the second point relates to the Isur v'heter itself. He makes sense once you realize that he held that chicken in milk is the oraisa, as he explicitly writes in Klal Mem. The Rama may have had a different reading, though, in the Isur v'heter. As the Taz notes, we find the Rama acknowledges explicitly his tshuvos. Shematzinu b'tshuvos Rama b'sofan shekasav b'midei achrina. He wrote in another matter, Shebenusach Shalobi Suvaheter Ksavyad Lo Haya Kasuv Kamoshihu Benit Pasim. So he might have had a different gear set. But still, that doesn't change it. Elishitsarich Iyum Bamasha Kasav Hoio Vitam Kikardiraisa. That doesn't make sense. The Ein Bazeklum. The important point here is that the essential reasoning appears at first reading flawed, as the Taz argued above. But the Taz, however, redeems the Deya of the Ramah with a second reading. Aval nire, de shapir kamar Ramah, de kevan de matzino bibasar of bechalav. We add the word of there, as the Chasam Sofer does to make sense, right? Not just basar bechalav, but basar of bechalav. She'asu chachamim chizuk l'divrayem shel tover mamash kigon le'inyan achilas gvina achar basar. Right? They're also machmir in basar oaf. Kemo she'kasav reish siman peites sif aleph. V'chein besif beis l'yesh machmirim she'mevi ramah. V'chein l'halo so'al shulchan. V'lo chashvinon la gzera l'gzera. In Basar B'chalav, Chazal make many extensions to the rabbinical prohibition of chicken and milk, so that it is parallel to the Torah prohibition of Basar Behema. This is in the realm of Kol de Tikkun Rabbona Ke'ein D'Oraisa Tikkun. So he has an implicit kasha here. So why doesn't this fall afoul of the principle Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira? If something is itself a Gzeira only, we don't heap upon it additional precautions to protect the Gezeira when it's only a protection against the Veira in itself, right? We don't write, make Gezeiras and Gezeira. So first, for this, we're going to take a quick look into the Gemara cited by the Taz. So if you'll open up Chulin, please, to Perek Kol HaBasar, the first Mishnah, the eighth Perek. We will, in Yirtzeh Hashem, come to know this quite well. This coffee is like an hour of meditation for my soul. Okay. We want to get to the Gemara, right? There it is. Hiding again. What is it, Kuf Dalet, I think?
The mission begins on Kuf Gimel Amid Beis.
Kuf Gimel Amid Beis, okay, good. Kol HaBasar Asur Levashel V'Chalav Chutz Mibsar Dagim V'Chagavim. One may not cook any meat with milk except the meat of fish. It's called meat, actually. And grasshoppers. Okay. David Carradine fans may find it difficult, the notion that we can eat grasshoppers. Even though they may be basar linguistically, they're not included in the Mishnah's Kol HaBasar. So significantly, though, chicken is included, right? The asur lahalos im hagvina ala shulchan chutz mi basar dagim v'chagavim. Not only the Torah prohibition, derech bishul asra Torah, is extended to chicken, but the rabbinic prohibitions to prepare or eat them on the same table as basar or as milk is also extended to chicken. So look at the Gemara in Kuf Dalet, V'asur L'Halos. As soon as he sees that, if you're not allowed to put chicken on the table, I must conclude, you made a Gzeira L'Gzeira, or it's D'Oraisa. So the fact that you're not allowed to prepare chicken and milk on the same table, Amar Rav Yosef, Shema Mina, Basar Ot B'Chalav D'Oraisa, according to this Mishnah, right? D'Isalka Datach D'Rabbanin, Achila gufa gezeira, the ana nixar hala atu achila. Already, it's only derabbanan not to eat chicken, right? It's only derabbanan not to eat chicken. How can you then say that you're not allowed to prepare them on the same table? That would be gezeira l'gezeira, right? So this is followed by an attempt to prove that we do gezeira l'gezeira. Skipping down a little bit, aval hafa. Isharisle lasuke of lahalos ofu gvina al shulchan achad ase lasuke basar ugvina. You would come then perhaps to make a mistake and put basar ugvina umechan. You might wind up eating basar b'chalav d'oraisa. So in effect, all of basar of b'chalav is one gzeira. That is to protect Jews against eating Basar Behema Tahora in Chalav Behema Tahora. We'll see the remaining details of this sugya, God willing, in a few weeks. In effect, then, We are gozring zera l'gzera in Besarov, in effect. In fact, the Mishpel Zahav, Sif Kufay, the pre-Megudin writes on the Taz in the Mishpel Zahav, that's the way the Knesset HaGadola summarizes the Taz's position in the Hagos Satur. Because it's so easy to make a mistake with chicken and meat, we extend the gezeira of Besar Of Bechalav. Now the Shach disputes the Taz's logic and applies the distinction between the Araisa and the Rabbanan in Mishpach uniformly. And so he treats milk in chicken, the Mishpach, completely a Sveked Rabbanan Lekula. That's the Shach versus the Taz. Yes, sir.
Can you say, this may be a little bit of reach, but based off the Gemara says Kol Basar. So the Ramah says before, when he talks about mixtures, is that we go according to the name. The Gemara distinguishes that. The only thing that distinguishes between Basar is Dagim and, I forgot the term for grass. So maybe it's Ramah Lishitaso, because it's all Basar. And therefore the Ramah would hold regarding chicken, it would fall into the same category. Yes, chicken is different than meat, but the fact is it still has the name of Basar, even according to the Gemara.
So we, in the end, that'd be good if we said the Ramah really holds Basar Shama Aslina. But we decided in the end that what he meant by Basar Shama Aslina is only in those things that are not in a shear of Shishim, right? But are in like Masayim or more. So where they're exceptions to the rule. So they fall outside the rubric of regular Bitul and Bitul Tav. Okay? In a few weeks, God willing, a few months, we should encounter the word Chagavim in the weekly Parsha. Is that, well, did I make that up, or is that in
no.
the Torah? Oh, okay, good. All right. I thought maybe it was usually during Krista Torah, there's so many people talking that I sometimes confuse the Kriya with what people are saying. Okay.
Were you talking about Krista Torah, or was that a
Kriya? I was shocked growing up in Philadelphia to discover that the word 76ers was not actually in the Kriya. Since I heard it so often during Kriya. There are children that grow up in Queens who think that the first words after Hakel HaKadosh are the Knicks. That's right. So I was wondering, what is so important that people have to talk to me? I must lead a very trivial life, because I have nothing to say. I have nothing to say during the Chazar Sashans. You know? Okay, what's the Psak? So we have the Shach and the Taz. Okay. The Shach on the one hand, who says if chicken falls into, or milk falls into a chicken on the stove, right? But wait a minute, chicken falls in on the stove, it's not only drabanan, and therefore if nishbach, and we don't know whether or not it's their shishim, it's only a drabanan, and we apply that principle. We have the Taz, however, who rules from the fact that the rabbis extend the prohibitions of Besar Of Bechalav to be parallel to those of Besar Behema Bechalav. We have him who says that in that case Nishpach, and we don't know where the Shishim, that it's Aser, right? So, what do we do? Well, if we have the Shach versus the Taz, certainly, at least in cases of Hefsei Merube, we for certain can follow the Shach, writes the Prima Gadi. And so we find explicitly in the Pischei Tshuva and the Minchas Yaakov, all Svarim that we have to have a sense of and that we'll examine in greater detail, at least on one occasion, God willing. Okay. Now, one little question somebody asked me downstairs who doesn't come but listens. In the Siman, it says that a suffek is not, it makes a distinction between a suffek and just and a chesron yediya, dashotim, versus a real suffek. So, what is that? Okay, now. Obviously, chesron yediya, right? If let's say it didn't rabbanan, most Jews could say, "Ani musupak." I don't know. I've got a doubt. I don't know what the law is. Must be mutter, right? No, that's not a suffek. A suffek is not because of your own lack of knowledge or inability to do something. For instance, if he says you're not able lamod alav, so the words of the Torah are sometimes corrected to say they're not so precise. It means if you can't, you know, figure it out, but other people could, then it's not a suffek. It's only when nishbach, a case like nishbach, and that's why he gives nishbach, that it's totally out of the realm of possibility for anyone to know, right? Because it's been spilled. We don't know, you know. Not only can't you cry over spilled milk, you can't be mishai or spilled milk. Okay? All right? So, in that case, that's a real suffek. Nishpach is a suffek, whereas a lack of knowledge, chesron yediyah, on your own part, that's particular to you, is merely das shoti. Okay? Now, many times I would say to, when I would ask, boy would say something in a chabur or something, he'd say something, or in shir, he'd say, give a svar, he'd say, it's a machlokas, you and the mechaber, right? Okay? Or it's a machlokas, you and chazal, you know, right? So the fact of the matter is, chesron yediyah doesn't elevate our own opinions to be classical suffix. So that's what that's about. That's what das, it just reduces it to das shoti, right? A suffix is a logical impossibility to know. And that's why he gives the example of nishpach. Okay? Okay? We have only a couple other inyanim to do, but I'm not unhappy with the pace because of the importance of tzadi ches. So I'm spending a lot of time on it, and I'm going to continue so we get the grounding principles. We're also spending time on getting to know the svarim, which I think is to your advantage, right? And to know who these people were and, you know, where they lived. You should know that, you know, Rabbi Sholem Shachna, Rabbi Yisrael Pollack, these are, you know, big important names. And you should at least know what the Torah's Chatas is and who wrote it, you know, and how it fits in. Yes, sir.
Two questions, if I may follow up on your last
points. Uh-huh.
First is, I remember how many years ago it was in Yeshiva when we were learning Brachos, alongside that, learning some halacha with Yosefta and the, I forget now, Shulchan Aruch or Allah, but it could be, I think, Allah, I'd say that if the Mesupah, basically the Mesupah, Gemar Shakal, Niyam Bukhara, would that be the same type of Mesupah? As in, I really don't know what, as I really, the lack of, I forgot the term to use, of Das or a simple.
Well, generally we have a klal first, so that it removes it from that rubric anyways, so Suffolk Brachos Lahakel, so we have a general klal and brachos anyway.
But brachos lahakel would be the type of, I'm just not sure.
Yeah, I'm just not sure, right? So in that case, you know, you have to make a bracha, right? Mm-hmm. And you could be in a situation where you don't know what the, you know, now there could be also situations where it's difficult, where it's talia bedeya, and you don't, and you can't figure out what the, I don't mean knowledge, but, you know, cognitive approach, like Ikar v'Tafel, might not always be determined by formalist rules. It could also be determined by usage, right? So it could also be Hefsei Merubah, we'll see, could be contextual. It may not be absolute, right? So it may be that, you know, Hefsei Merubah for me is not the same as Hefsei Merubah for Michael Bloomberg, right? You know, what's Hefsei Merubah for him is a far greater amount than what's Hefsei Merubah for me, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there could be times that certain, generally Chazal insist on shirim, because it's hard to live in the world of absolutes, right? So it's hard to live in a world of sviya, right, where you only bench when you're satisfied. I had periods of my time, of my life, when I thought I was probably never chayev to bench media rice, right? Because I never was completely full, right? But the fact of the matter is, Chazal give a shirim, so we know, right, what to, and they define those for us. Halacha l'moshe m'sinai, generally, okay? So, by the way, whether halacha l'moshe m'sinai actually means that it was halacha l'moshe m'sinai, there's one place, I think in Mikvos, that the Rosh actually says that the halacha l'moshe m'sinai means a halacha that's as old and as reliable as if it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai, mm-hmm. and therefore it just means a halacha atika.
Mm-hmm.
But it may not be Dioresis. I think that's the Russian Mikvah, so I'll have to look it up. But the fact is, we shouldn't err and think that Halacha Moshe Sinai always means that they mean it's a Dioresis or something of that sort. Yes?
Second question is, does this Shachaz Machlokes here, is it related at all to what people do between Basar, Machal, Basar, Oph, Machal, Tech? More I'm thinking about it, probably not, but I'll ask it anyways. Does that at all relate to the people who say, no, basar oaf when they eat, when you're drinking or eating chalav afterwards? I'm not talking about basar b'chalav here, but the meat followed by dairy. Does that at all influence the, those who, I only started hearing about this about a year and a half ago, I heard people say, oh no, when I eat chicken, I only wait an hour afterwards, and then I add that dairy.
So we're going to see when we get there, but he apparently made reference to it by quoting, you know, the simanim and the Shulchan Aruch, that we're going to see that there's usually no distinction by most poskim between chicken and milk. The or chicken and meat are treated the same way, and that's what he meant to say. That was his proof, right? Lahalos and the waiting that they're that therefore it's not gzeira l'gzeira, it's one big gzeira. Certainly the shita that I saw recently by a young person to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, new man, that doesn't work. I don't think anybody holds that way, right? Okay? All right? So I'm fine. By the way, this Thursday, right, is it this week?
This coming.
It's this week. Is a time when you have to be careful about waiting between fowl and milk. If you actually do eat turkey, according to Shita, that says that's mutter to eat turkey, right? I'll leave that to Professor Zivotofsky, who wrote the famous piece on that. But in any case, since you'll probably be so concerned with researching and thinking about the Taz, we're not going to meet next Sunday, okay? So I know that people who are going to be spending the time looking in the Torah's Chatas to discover what the eating of turkey actually means, qua basar b'chalav, so I'll let you research that topic, and we'll see each other in 2 weeks. That does not mean, please check while you Torah. That doesn't mean that I might not put up an interim recorded shiur, or that actually Adam may not put up, they may send one to you. I think I can do it, I'll try to do it, but if I can do it, I will. That means I may not put one up in the interim, or even two. So in the future, what I would eventually hope to do is, when I have a full library of these that are pretty well organized, relative to what I've done in the past, I should say, I'm going to assign people to listen to these, and then I'm going to come in and just read sources, Prima Gadim all the time, and Chavis Das and other things, and make it more of a, but you're getting to participate in the creation of the material, right, as the laugh track, so to speak. Okay, so I wish everybody Chag Sameach, and the Rav celebrated this holiday, I believe, and I do too, with the traditional booing of the Detroit Lions, which I will have turned on in the background while I'm learning since my son is driving to Detroit, God willing, to go to the game and visit his grandmother. So
the Spanish Portuguese, my father-in-law is one of the guys there. They say hala.
They say hala without a bracha.
Without a bracha.
Okay.
No tafel.
No tafel. Yeah. Okay. So I think the Rav said not to say tafel. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They're very machped on that. They have a whole big breakfast, a whole big davening.
Really, it's very nice.
Really, it's like 2.5 hours.
I must say it, by the way, they have a brochure they put out on there, all their Minhagim and everything.
It's in it. So, it's 25.
So my daughter went there to daven. She liked it very much, and she brought me the brochure to read. I liked it very, very much. So
your daughter lives on the Upper West Side?
On the Upper West Side. So she went there to daven once. And,
really?
She,
she always had a meal by my in-laws.
Okay, well, the one thing about my daughter and me is she loves me very much. And but does not involve me in her social life whatsoever. So I have no inyan there, as all my daughters do not involve me in their social life, having no interest in my opinion. Okay. As a matter of fact, I don't think my sons have any interest in my opinion either. Anyway, so yeah, Chag Sameach to everybody. Please.